Welcome, everyone, this evening, this afternoon, wherever you are in the world, to another great episode of The Peaceful Planet. And you were listening to the lyric version of The Peaceful Planet. And that music was originally produced by the late Bob Murray, and we thank James Murray of The Stars Still Shine for providing it. And also, the lyrics were transcribed by me, and it is a reflection of the work that is continuing on the spirit side for the grounding of world peace. And tonight we have a special guest, Dr. Linda Seeger, and I will get to her biography in just a moment. But she's a fantastic person and has written a book called Reflections with God While Waiting to Be Healed. And also, I have some announcements. If you're joining us for the first time, The Peaceful Planet features angelic messages from the other side. We're not doing any readings this evening because we want to give every moment to our special guest, but I have a few announcements and some messages from Princess Diana and Lady Aurora of the Divine Feminine. So before we get to that, I'm going to be teaching Awakening Angels with myself and Journaling with the Divine, and that is going to happen May the 27th, 2018. And it is about inner transformation of your life and going within for the inner wisdom. And the class will begin in May, and you can contact me by email at marciadi, as in Marcia, D-I, as in Diana, at 2002@yahoo.com, and it's approximately 2 days of training with a lot of information about the history of angels and art, and beginning to sense and doing guided meditation, exploring your angel guide, and then learning to journal with the help of the divine. And I think everyone will take something from this class, and I've offered it many times. If you're a Reiki healer, you also can get an angelic Reiki healing certificate if you demonstrate your healing skills to the level of bringing in the angelic presence, and I'm going to do demonstrations of that in the class. So that's something that you won't want to miss if you're an advanced healer or just a spiritual seeker. And then I would also like to announce that I'm doing Reiki Level 1 and 2, and that is happening on the 6th of May. And so I'll be offering that class near Springfield, Illinois, and if you are in and around Springfield and you'd like to come to the house, again, just email me, and I will be teaching the class at my home office. And occasionally, I do offer retreats in larger areas. So those are some announcements, and then I'm going to read some beautiful messages from the angelic spirit of Lady Aurora, and I'm looking for that message right now, and it's very inspirational to open our show with our wonderful guest, Dr. Linda Seeger. This is going to set the tone for the grounding of the Divine Feminine, which we were I've been speaking about the Divine Feminine and the Jesus Mysteries for years now, and we've been featuring messages from various spiritual hierarchy Divine Feminine figures like Diana and Mary Magdalene. And I will bring in a brief message from Diana after this powerful message from Lady Aurora, and it's titled, I Am the Divine Feminine. And this is Lady Aurora, and I am the Divine Feminine Energy, and I come with the greatest love, awe, and respect of the Creator. I am the creative intelligence of the Cosmic Mother and the birther of all radiance and vibration. I embrace you this day with the arms of the Divine Feminine. I held many names through the ages as Shekinah, Isis, Mother Mary, Mary Magdalene, and many more in ancient cultures. I am the mother to all of you, my people of earth, and the universal mother in the heavens. I am robed in the purest white and gold cloth. I dwell in the secret place of the Most High. I am who am. I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the dance, and I am the Shiva, the dancer. I pulsate with life energy, and I am the still waters of the soul. I am crying out to be heard in this society which pollutes the earth, denigrates women in false teachings. I yearn to become one with my people. I and the Father are one, and yet my cries for my people go unheard. My children are dying, the earth is in upheaval, and I yearn for my waters to be free and my people everywhere to have joy. Listen to my call and hearken to call of the Mother calling you home. I am Lady Aurora. I am the sound of the waves upon a beach, and I am still waters. Blessed be all who hear my pleas to my people to make peace and let all my children go free. I bless you. I rest in truth today. I am comfort. And so that is a powerful and beautiful message from the divine aspect of the Divine Feminine, which has taken on many names. And then I have a very brief message from the lovely and late Princess Diana for her two sons. And it's a very special month for Diana. And I've been working with her, and I've published two books. You can check the books out on the website of The Peaceful Planet. It's Princess Diana's Message of Peace, and then another title. So Princess Diana is saying, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the light of the Divine Feminine as Princess Diana. I wish to briefly address our listeners this evening. In my short but brief life on Earth, I was the essence of the Divine Feminine of love for people everywhere, and I send on my rose of love to all our listeners. And I would like to request for prayers for Catherine and William as they go through this next joyful adventure in the third child. My heart is filled with love and a tinge of sadness, knowing full well that I can't be with them or caress the young child. I am, however, looking over them with great pride and joy. And the same can be said of the joy which I hold for Prince Harry and his bride-to-be, Meghan Markle. I think they'll make a wonderful couple, and I only hope that she can adjust as an American to the life of a princess. It wasn't easy for me, and I was an English woman. And even still, there were those in the palace who disapproved. She will have her naysayers, but I wish her strength and love, and I hope that she and Harry will prove to be stronger than all the storms that will be coming their way. And then I ask all listeners that they would tune in to Marcia's books, and they have been corroborated from other psychics throughout the world. And I've been working on world peace for a long time. And I thank you, and I bid you a pleasant evening in the energies of the Divine Feminine. So thank you for listening to my messages. And I am so pleased to announce our wonderful guest, Dr. Linda Seeger. And I would like now to read her bio, and then we'll get right into discussing her many and varied talents. Dr. Linda Seeger has a broad religious background. She grew up Lutheran and did several years of spiritual seeking in her 20s. She became a born-again Christian and then joined the Quakers, known as the Society of Friends. And she is a member of the Colorado Springs Friends Meeting. Throughout the years, she has meditated as in a Zen Buddhist center and attended New Age get-togethers. Her website is Seeger, on spirituality.com. And Dr. Seeger has a, okay, I need to skip through that. And throughout the years, she has meditated at Zen Buddhist Center and attended New Age conferences, and she has done the exercises of St. Ignatius. She has read and taken classes in the religions of the world. She has a PhD in drama and theology and created her script consulting business on her dissertation project about the elements needed to make a script work. She explored the integration of drama and spirituality during her 5 years in seminary. She holds 3 MA degrees, drama from Northwestern University, religion and arts from the Pacific School of Religion, and feminist theology from Immaculate Heart College Center. Dr. Seeger has built her script consulting business on spiritual principles in her book. She is dedicated to helping her clients express their spirituality through writing and to deepening the themes and values found in films. She has long been interested in the relationship of spirituality and creativity. As a result of her broad religious background, she is able to nurture spiritual values of others through her books and public speaking. Dr. Seeger lives near Colorado Springs, and she has authored numerous books on spirituality and screenwriting. So we're delighted to have you grace the Peaceful Planet with all your talent. Welcome to the Peaceful Planet. How are you this evening?
Yes, thank you, Marcia, so much. And what lovely readings about peace and love and just sort of the right values. So thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for all the work that you've done. Reflections with God While Waiting to Be Healed is really an inspirational book. I loved reading it. I came back to my favorite sections. I have them all bookmarked.
That's good.
So I understand that you've had quite a successful life. So before we get to that book, tell us a little bit about how you came to get all these degrees and do this fantastic work in script consulting in Hollywood. I guess you were the behind-the-scenes person.
Yeah, well, the degrees kind of piled up unknowingly. So I had been very interested in theater and drama, and I went right on for a master's degree after getting a BA in English. And I started to get very interested in theology, my last year of college. And it's partly this whole thing of seeking. I felt I had inherited my religion from my parents, which, of course, I had. I was Lutheran. I came from a long line of Lutheran ministers and missionaries and theologians. But I had a lot of affirmation of seeking. I did not come from a rigid religious family. We were churchgoers. We were, quote, religious, spiritual, but there was not this hard line like, oh, don't you dare question your religion. In fact, before I left for college, my mother said to me, go ahead and question. If your religion doesn't stand up to questioning, it's no good anyway, so that's fine. And I found my way in many, many paths through number of years. My last year of college, I actually became a fundamentalist. I hadn't grown up that way. I became a born-again Christian. I was baptized a second time. I went through kind of that whole thing for a couple years. And what it did give to me is I got into the Bible more. I got into prayer. I got into meditation. But I felt I had not yet found my spiritual home. And finally, a few years later, I went to a Quaker meeting, and I have been a Quaker since 1970. But I have a lot of respect for what a broad range of spirituality, and sometimes I wonder if some of spirituality is just what fits you personally in terms of your personality. I'm very extroverted. And going to the Quakers, who are very introspective and very centered, was very balancing to me. And so I don't have negative feelings about people's spiritual and religious paths like a lot of people do, because I did not grow up in that kind of rigidity. And
That's good.
I just felt free to find my space.
I was just going to insert that, yes, I figured that you were a Quaker because you needed that inner experience of God, you know. And
yes.
So go ahead, please.
Yeah, and I had gotten very interested in, I mean, what we in Catholicism is called mysticism, and it's called mysticism in other areas, but that sense of direct contact and that sense of the presence and of peace. And I am not a natural contemplative. There's a lot of Quakers who are, and so meditation and being centered, it doesn't come easily to me. And then, as you mentioned, my book, Reflections with God, While Waiting to be Healed, I have had dystonia for 8-9 years, which is a movement disorder, which means that kind of centering of just being still and being peaceful. Because of this problem, I haven't been able to do that until recently, when I have been going to a doctor in Houston, and I have improved hugely. I'm not healed completely by any means, but I can be more meditative and more centered than I was a few years ago. I'm so glad to hear that.
I've had a corollary illness called epilepsy that I developed a couple years ago, and that has the same kind of effect with a lot of shaking, and that's a longer story, but I can relate totally because I've also been a breast cancer survivor. So you go into the this kind of thing in your book quite a bit, and I'm glad to hear you're feeling better.
Yes, and I also had cancer 3 Christmases ago and went through that. So that all led to thinking a lot about thinking a lot about theology and how we deal with illness or any kind of, issues. I mean, they can be mental, they can be spiritual, they can be physical. And I wrote the book, Reflections with God While Waiting to be Healed, because I wasn't getting better when I thought I should be getting better. And I thought, how does your theology change? How does your relationship with the divine change when it's not going quite how you want it to go? And how do you rethink that? I mean, you really have a chance, a choice. You can turn your back on all things spiritual, or you can reconnect with them and say, okay, obviously my theology or my spiritual life has been more narrow than what my reality is telling me I have to deal with. So I guess I better do some more reflection and thinking. And that's what I did with that.
Yes,
I was just thinking about, in a way, we go through all these different relationships with the spiritual side. I mean, starting a business, my script consulting business was, it didn't exist. I made it up. No one had ever heard of me. They didn't want to hire me. They had never paid for the service I was offering. And that's a lot of anxiety, to feel, in a sense, I am called to do something, and it's going to be a hard road to make that happen. And so, again, you're dealing with the spirit in a different way, which is, how do I deal with my anxiety? How do I deal with creating a path that hasn't been created before?
Oh, I know that feeling too. Yeah, I've been called upon too to do these books and the channeling of Princess Diana. It's a very difficult task, you know. It's really beautiful, but it's difficult. You have to be willing to go out on a limb, and that's where really all the gold is. I'm not talking money gold, but I think you were more successful than I. But still, I think you had to go out on a limb in a field that wasn't even open to women at that time. Isn't that so?
Yes. And you have to have that courage and that commitment and some sense of holding it together, because there's all these temptations along the way. There's the temptation to be competitive. There's the temptation for what I call number one thinking, which I am the greatest. And I do have colleagues that do that, and you Your ego starts getting out of control, and your pride and all sorts of other stuff. And I actually wrote a book on that called Spiritual Steps on the Road to Success, which dealt with how do you take those steps and keep your spiritual life alive.
That's a very profound thought, too. I'll have to get a hold of that book, too. So did you have to go to Hollywood to actually do this work, or were you able to work as a consultant with these various top filmmakers?
No, I was living just outside of L.A., and I lost my job in the theater department at a college. I wasn't fired.
Oh.
They literally left everybody go except for one person. They had overbuilt the department, and all of a sudden I'm near Hollywood. And, you know, and I think, well, the obvious thing would be to enter the film industry because it's drama, and I found the film industry was not waiting eagerly for me. So I kind of eked my way into it, and I took any kind of job I could. And I actually got my first job because I was a fast typist, and that's what I sold myself on.
Well, you have multiple
talents. That was the only thing I cared about.
Yeah, you have multiple talents, and so, you know, I want to ask you, too. I've seen your website. It's lindaseeger.com, correct, for our listeners, the main website? And I thought I ran into a beautiful picture of you acting as the Divine Sophia, and I thought, wow, I got to interview this lady when I saw your picture in that theater production. What was that all about?
Oh, that was so sweet. I was in a Reader's Theater production, and I played Saint Sophia. I was kind of a narrator, and they had Plato, and they had Martin Luther. Just about every great person you can think of was personified in this production, and I was asked to be the Saint Sophia. And I have felt very, very fascinated with this character for... Oh, I suppose I got fascinated maybe in the 90s. And, you know, what you're calling, like when we talk about Diana, you've used words of war. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, she's called Sophia, which means wisdom.
Really? And, yes. I know that. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And, I love the idea.
Well, and it's interesting with Sophia, this feminine, that many religions, and I know Judeo-Christian the best, they're very patriarchal, they're very masculine-oriented.
Exactly.
And women are trying to free that and find where is the feminine. And, I mean, some people have left the Judeo-Christian tradition, but I haven't because I have found that Sophia wisdom within it. But you do have to look a bit for to find her amidst everything else. And she is, if people are biblically oriented, she's actually discussed in Proverbs 8, which is my favorite chapter in the Bible, because she was with God at the beginning in the creation of the world.
I totally confirm that. That is my understanding of the book of, I want to go back to all the way to Genesis, but Sophia is mentioned very early on in the Bible, so... That is true, and I love that. So how was it playing Sophia? It sounds like you were right in your element.
Well, the thing is that the saint was actually a mother of three children that were martyred. And so I there's a certain emotionality, and, of course, one of those qualities, there is a sense you talk about, sometimes people talk about her as the mother or the person who cares deeply for humanity and for children, and I tried to get in touch with that. And it was really cute. I wore a kind of like a headdress. So it was, you know, she was Byzantine, but this headdress was from Russia.
That's what it looked like. It was a Byzantine.
But no one's going to know the difference between Russian and Byzantine. So I guess
I would, because I was an art history professor, Linda. So I know about that. That's why I was impressed by that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but there is this, I guess when you're asking about my profession, is when I started my business, one of the things is I read a lot about Sophia, about wisdom, and I tried to kind of get into that sense of peace and harmony. And said she's benevolent. One of the verses in the Bible said she is waiting for you. I mean, she's like so accessible that she is waiting on your doorstep for you to open the door.
Isn't yes, that a and I agree image? With that. That is lovely. And I feel also that she's a natural healer, that she's the nurturing aspect of God and the natural
yes.
healing. And I've worked with divine feminine angelic realm and Reiki and at other, you know, healing retreats and things that I've given. And it seems like it's very, very much time for the divine feminine to be named and called out by name in the churches and in the retreats. And I don't feel that I could ever present my work in a church, you know. So I do it in retreats, but it's very important, you know, and there's symbols of divine feminine throughout the Christian tradition with Mother Mary, but Mary Magdalene, for instance, was repressed, so I'm
yeah.
writing on her. But I'm interested in, you know, what you were saying about, you know, how you were integrating these qualities into where you were in the rat race in L.A. I mean, that's a very hard call. Good for you.
I think one thing that I learned, because I felt I was following a calling, and I guess I would describe it as that when I would get frenetic or when I would feel uncentered or get competitive, I really tried to sit down, and like I say, as I read a lot about her, especially in what's called the Apocrypha. This is the part of the Bible that...
yes, I'm familiar with that.
Kind of, you know, they cut it out of, it's in the Catholic Bible. It's not in the Protestant Bible, and I wish it were. But just being able to think in terms of, say, if I'm following my calling that I really feel I've been called to do, that I will be taken care of. I may not get rich, but I believe I will make it. I won't end up in the gutter someplace. And so
that's a great way to feel about your work, you know, especially when you're branching out, Linda.
Yeah, and saying it's not about the money. It's just got keep me keep my nose above water, and keep me really centered on what I'm supposed to do. And it is so easy to get into that off center. That, you know, I would just think a lot about the sense of peace and harmony and benevolence and saying and being good to other people. It's really easy if you're competitive to say, well, I can't help that other person. So you know what? If I'm following my calling, there is abundance out there. There's plenty out there, and I can, you know, help other people get jobs. I can put myself out for them. I can recommend them.
That's how I feel. I'm more than happy to help another person always. I've always been
yeah.
that way. And it's very important, even if you held a prestigious position like teaching at a university, I did that too, and I always was very willing to help my students. But I'd help anybody, you know. And it's very, you know, if you're given a position of power, you need to use that power correctly. And you seem to be a very good example of that. And then, of course, you know, needing to go within, I guess the Friends Church is the perfect place for you, because I'm a natural intuitive, and it was very hard for me to speak in front of public when I was first initiated into the teaching by the rite of, fire, I guess you could say. It was very challenging, and it was very hard. And then I became very accomplished in public speaking, and then I'm doing a radio show. But you know, I've taught all my life. My only thing is I have to know now how to be quiet. But I enjoy the quietness. And your book, getting back to your book, Reflections with God, and While Waiting to Be Healed, has a lot of key points that I think are very, very important. And the one thing that struck me, many things struck me, and I could quote from it from various chapters, and I have them all bookmarked, but the main thing that you seem to be in the topic of is that you're waiting to be healed. And a lot of people in America, anyway, think that, you know, you go and you get a treatment from the doctor, you should be done and finished with your treatment, and it should be all healed. And that didn't happen with me. And I had something, you know, I had stage 4 breast cancer, and, you know, that it's always hovering over you. I've been healed, you know, 7 years, but, you know, I had some neurological damage to my right hand. So I could really relate to what you were saying, because some people, I work with a lot of other healers and Reiki people, and, you know, a lot of them walked away from me when I became disabled from my condition. And I think you've experienced the same things with what people think about you and what people think about suffering, because it doesn't really fly in our society too well, does it?
Yeah, what is so interesting is on the one hand, there's numerous verses in the Bible about ask and you shall receive, and that, you know, God wants, brings health, and even with verses about Sophia is sort of this thing about, you know, bringing health and peace. And you begin to think about what's wrong with me if I'm not healed. Because obviously, I guess I'm not positive enough, or I'm not praying enough, or I'm not meditating enough. And after a while, I said, wait a minute, you know what? I think there's something wrong here with this theology. Now, in Christianity, there is a way out because of the suffering of Jesus. And in a sense, I think a lot of Christians forget that. So it wasn't as if this passed by Jesus and he didn't have to suffer, as he suffered hugely. And, of course, there are a lot of suffering people around, and he healed them. But, you know, there are a lot of suffering people, and when you start getting realistic, you say, well, obviously, it's not just, oh, you know, a flick of the fingers and you are fine. And I think one of the things I realized was my names for God, that is, you know, there's hundreds of names for God, from Lamb of God who takest away the sins of the world, to Savior, to Healer, to Miracle Worker, and all of that. And I said, you know, the only thing I wanted from God was to be Healer and Miracle Worker, and I think that was pretty limiting. And I really didn't like what I call blame theology. Blame theology says, well, if you only did, then you would be healed, and it is that you have a problem. And instead, what I started to do is I thought, what do I experience with God? And I thought, I experience God as the sustainer. I experience God as the strengthener. I experience God as the person who gives me courage. I experience God as the person who takes me out of my despair. Because, as you know, and I'm sure many of your listeners know, it is really easy to go into despair and depression. And
especially with a chronic long-term illness that can't be solved easily. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and
it requires a lot of physical therapy.
I think the Holy Spirit is there in the midst of our suffering, and I think that we are so uncomfortable with suffering. Like you say, people turn away. Say, if I get too close to that person, in some way it's contagious.
Yeah.
Or I think people don't know what to do with it, because they say, well, what if I had that? Oh, I couldn't deal with that. So it is best for me to try to control the situation and say, well, if you only prayed a little more. I had a relative one time confront me about not being healed yet. And I said, you have had all these problems with your knees, and your husband is hard of hearing. And I said, you have troubles, and you're not healed. So if you're trying to give me advice and say, if only I did this well, I see that. And, of course, I also see the world is full of people who have things. You know, we all have, most of us in this world have things. And whatever they are things. And I don't want people to go around feeling guilty for being human and having flaws and not being perfect and not being able to get over their troubles. I'd rather see in the midst of that being able to find some peace and some harmony and some sense of caring and, you know, all of these different things that somehow I think in the midst of that we can find that sense of rest or that sense of joy.
I agree, and I got a sense of peace from your book. And I've interviewed a lot of healers on my program, and I am working in healing myself with being a Reiki master and teaching it. And I know that there's a beautiful energy flow, and I feel the divine flowing through me. But there's some things, as you point out in the book, that you're still waiting for the healing to come along. And, you know, basically, I believe in miracles, and I'm faithful, and I believe that God can do anything. And it's not a matter of faith, but you have to have faith to be healed in the first place. But it's not your fault if you don't make a full recovery. And that's, you know, as a healer, you have to kind of release that person to whatever their destiny is. And I've had a lot of people try to quote-unquote fix me. You know, it's like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
They've told me that obviously I brought all this the stuff, the suffering of the stage 4 cancer on myself, and obviously it was something that I had created in my life or in my past life, and I was like, I think it was a series of mishaps with misdiagnosis. So I have a different view of that, and, you know, it's complex when you're living with something that isn't, you know, going away like you'd like it to, and you're still waiting on your healing, and you've had healing prayer done for you, and you've had Reiki done, and you've had I've done hypnosis, and I've done a lot of, you know, I had acupuncture. I thought it was interesting, too, that your husband works in massage and acupuncture.
Yes, and he feels really badly because his acupuncture hasn't healed me, and his massage certainly helps, and he gives me a massage almost every night, but says, right, it hasn't. Yes, and I would love it. But I think there's also a conclusion to reach is to say what's really important. So what's really important is to love God. And you can love God in a wheelchair. You can love God when you got cancer. You can love God, whatever it is. And I think that in doing that, there is a surrender that is different than resignation. And
yes,
I think
agree.
Learning to say, you know, I'd love to be over this, and I might die with this. That might happen. Is I might have dystonia, and I'm dying, and saying, ooh, that's going to be pretty uncomfortable. But say, you know, it's still not the core thing for us to be concerned about. It's our spiritual life. It's our somehow coming to terms and having that relationship with the divine or God or how whatever you call that spirit.
And I think the divine feminine also fits into this reflections with God too, because, you know, if you would elaborate on that a little bit, I feel that the divine feminine is the nurturing support that you get along the way without the judgment, the friends that don't walk away from you, that embrace you as you are and say, welcome, and I'll sit with you. And they're not trying to fix you, and they're not trying to condemn you for your disease either, you know?
Yes, and one of the things I learned, and probably learned this really clearly when I had cancer, was to simply say yes and to be totally open to whatever people wanted to do for you. And I think that we push away easily that love or that sense of caring rather than saying, you know what, do you want to make me dinner or bring over dinner or take me to the doctor or whatever it is, because our sense of self-reliance says I shouldn't be doing that. I had a friend that I had helped through cancer, and she says, I want to come and be with you on some of your radiation treatments, and she was coming from L.A. Now, my husband said to me, I am willing to go to every one of your radiation treatments with you, and I knew he would. And I said, it's important for the giver. It's important for my friend Kathleen for me to accept that love, that she is going to fly from Los Angeles to Colorado Springs, and she's going to go with me because she says, you were there for me, and I want to be there for you. And what I found was in the midst of accepting that, there is great joy. You find the way people give and when you receive. I was talking to my cousin who's 86 and finding out that it's not real easy being 86. And I said, this is the time in your life to say yes. When people say, I'll take you to the doctor, don't say, oh, I'm sure I'll manage. Say yes. When they say, let me bring over food, yes. You keep saying yes, and you say, I can be a receiver. And in my receiving, I am giving back. Because I am showing my appreciation for that person's generosity. I am affirming their virtues that they want to give to me. I said, go ahead and give me all your, you know, generosity and care and compassion. I'm going to take it in. And I think, as you say, that's part of the divine feminine. That's part of the nurturing coming to us and say, how could we reject God when God says, I'm here to help you? And then you say, oh, no. No, you can't say that.
You have to accept the love that's given. I can relate to what you're saying because I had strangers helping me throughout my chemo process. And, you know, a lot of times I was too ill to make dinner. And one neighbor lady sent soup down one night. And what a saving grace that was. And various people from all people that I barely knew would give me music that was uplifting or something, you know. And I was on a lot of prayer lists and Reiki healing lists, and people would write me. And, you know, one lady called, and she was just a support right before I went through the chemo, which I would never do again. But, you know, it's it was a very traumatic experience. And so all that is part of your circle of the divine feminine coming through in service to you, and also your good karma that you put out as living a good life, and it does come back to you. But I thought it was very interesting that your husband was a healer and that you've gone through this experience, and it's just an interesting facet. It's almost like you seem to complement each other in a weird way. I don't mean to become probing or anything. I just noticed that he was in the healing intuitive arts, and then you were in a field where you had to be a little more assertive. So that's very interesting that you have that other side of you that's the feminine divine and love the feminine divine. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on, besides feminist theology, which it all began, I guess, in the 70s or 80s, and I had a good friend become one of the first women ministers in the Presbyterian Church, and I thought that was wonderful. I was raised Roman Catholic, but I don't practice it at all and dropped out of the church sometime in my early 30s. But, you know, it's just the mystical side of things are still there. I find, you know, that attractive about that church. But getting back to, you know, I don't know if we'll ever, you know, see the divine feminine expressed in traditional religion. Maybe you have experienced that with a friend.
Well, it's an interesting thing. Of course, Quakerism has so much of that because Susan B. Anthony was related to Quakers. I mean, she was a Quaker, and I came from a Quaker family, and Lucretia Mott and the Grimke sisters. I mean, a lot of those early years in the feminist movement, those people were Quakers, and Quakers were very active in abolition and in prison reform and many social things. Yeah. So you do have that in Quakerism, but there's actually a lot of it in places. one of my theology teachers said, it's like the remnant. It's like you're looking at the big fabric and you see all this patriarchy, and then you look over in that corner and you say, oh, that's actually enough for me. That there are so many good things in that. And of course, in Catholicism, you have Mary, the mother of Jesus, and you also have the saints. And I mean, these saints, these women were, the women saints were just amazing. And
they were amazing. I mean, I was raised with that concept, and I just love them. I mean, I really love Mary Magdalene. She's my big saint now. But, you know, her story was never told. So go on about the saints and everything. And
well,
women.
The other thing that's happening in the Catholic Church, the nuns now, you know, maybe not in the 60s and the 50s, but the nuns now are amazing, and they are in many ways so deeply
into feminism. They definitely are, because I grew up with a lot of liberal nuns.
And I'm not saying all of them, but there are some nuns there that just knock your socks off. I mean, they are so with it. And
yeah.
It is so different than what people would explain who had grown up in Catholicism in the 50s or 60s and maybe 70s. But even with...
Even in the 60s and 70s, if I may say something about the nuns that I knew, Our Lady of the Elms in Akron, they had a really liberal group there, and they had them doing masses and everything. I mean, they were really liberated, you know. They wanted to be priests. So I know of some liberal nuns, and I was in their prayer groups for a while.
And if you look at the Protestant church now, there are so many women ministers.
There are.
There's a lot of churches around here where, in fact, there's some churches where both the minister, the main minister and the associate minister are women. And the United Church of Christ is one of the foremost in this, but United Methodists and Lutheran and a lot of these churches, they have women who are really bringing their congregations along with that sense of the nurturing and the feminine presence, and they're really making an impact in that sense. So that the church now, if you went to a Protestant church, especially if there were a woman minister, if you went to some of these Catholic churches, even with the priests, can be pretty much with that. It's very, very different than it was, and I find it very sustaining. For me, I mean, I've stayed within Christianity, but I did a lot of searching where I looked at other religions of the world, and I've met people from other religions, and there's a lot of people, I mean, I knew a Buddhist nun, and she said the patriarchal side of Buddhism, she said, I'm really struggling with that, and I realized that maybe Buddhism had not come as far as, say, Christianity and Judaism has, because they've had a very, very rich feminist movement in there. And there might be some of these other religions that maybe have not as much.
In areas of the world like the Middle East, it's very repressive of women. It's scary what they're doing over there, you know.
But you know that there's Muslim feminists, and
I've
met some of them. And again, they are saying, well, deep inside of this, where do I find my way as a woman? And some of them are finding their way and saying, I can remain as a Muslim because there is that space. And there are some things in the Quran that are really surprising about very positive opinions of women and some thinking that can get covered over with a lot of this other stuff that goes on, as we can see in any religion. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking, I briefly have looked at the Quran, and I do know from interviewing authors about the theory of Jesus being in India, for instance, there's parts of the Quran that we really, really revere Mother Mary and Jesus as well. And it's part of that book. It's part of the holy book. So, I've been to sites in Israel where they have shrines that are dedicated to Mother Mary and primarily Catholic, and the Muslim women all go there if they want to get pregnant, you know. So
they pray
to Mary. Well, so that's very, you know, intercultural. There's some of that, you know, in the Middle East everywhere.
And you're also talking, I mean, about both Mother Mary, as Mary the Mother of Jesus, and also Mary Magdalene. And it is believed that Mary Magdalene was one of the foremost leaders in the early church, and then that got covered up.
She definitely was, and that's part of my book.
You know, has a few things here and there, but there was actually a Gospel of Mary about, you know,
there is
Mary
a Gospel
Magdalene.
Of Mary, and I'm examining
it's not all together. I mean, there's a lot of parts missing, and it didn't make it into the Bible, but
it was because of the guys. The guys thought that they were better, and they exed out all the women's Gospels. But Mary was, you know, speaking for Mary, I like where you're going with this, because that is part of the book. But the Gospel of Mary originated in Egypt, and the Desert Fathers kept her scrolls, and then they were found in Egypt in this century, in the 20th century, and known as some of the, you know, fragments, of course, the Gospel of Mary, but it's Coptic. It was written in Egyptian, but she has also revealed to me that there are still scrolls that exist that are yet to be unearthed, and there are other documents that were found, I guess, in a little parish called Sainte Marie de la Mar in France, where...
I've been there.
Oh, you have? What was that like?
I've been to Santa Maria de la Mar. Yeah, I loved it. Lovely.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I think there were documents that were confiscated by the Catholic Church, and some of them may have been Mary Magdalene documents, too. There's a whole mystery around that church. Do you know about that?
Now, I don't know all of that, but there's certainly that sense of what's preserved and what isn't and who's preserving it. And as I say, there's a whole lot of white men that wrote history.
Exactly.
That left out a whole lot of other people that weren't writing history. And
if I can quote Mary Magdalene from my message, she always says, history is written by the winners. And so my gospel was eliminated by the church fathers, and I was denigrated to the status of a harlot. And then she goes on to say, call upon me in childbirth, because she, according to my sources, she was married to Jesus and there was one child. And that was a very sad situation, because he had been crucified and she had to leave with Mother Mary and go down to Egypt and all of that. But yes, her gospel is very beautiful, and I think it's a lot of revelations of her post-resurrection speaking with Jesus. And Peter comes into the play of the words, and he tries to say, who are you to talk about the Master when, you know, I'm the appointed disciple, I'm the appointed one, you know, and they get into a conflict, and then that's kind of what happened. Peter and the patriarchal system just took over, not that Peter was deliberately trying to stamp out her authority, but she was teaching as one with authority, you know, so, yeah.
There's a lot of beautiful things in the Bible. I mean, the people who discovered the empty tomb were women who went back to tell the men. And the women actually, you know, we think of these 12 apostles following Jesus around, but it was believed, and there's some, you know, if you read the Bible very carefully, that there were actually a group of people following him, and that the women were often providing for these men. And I almost think out of their wealth, because there were wealthy women that were surrounding him. And so you begin to get this different image. Say, it's not just a bunch of guys traipsing around the countryside. There were 12
disciples of women, which I'm going to talk about in my book as well. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And they were nurturing Jesus, and they were providing a great amount of wealth. He came from wealth, and even though his family was humble, Joseph of Arimathea provided a good deal, and so did Mary Magdalene and Martha and all of them. So you're quite right, and boy, I could just go on and on for hours, and we're already at the end of the show, Linda. So to review again, the book is Reflections with God While Waiting to Be Healed. It's a beautiful meditative book. It puts you in a good space, and it's worth reading more than once for the wisdom. And it We've been speaking with Dr. Linda Seeger, very accomplished, artist in many ways as an author and a script writing consultant. And I encourage everyone to check out her website at lindaseeger.com and to check out my classes at marciadi2002@yahoo.com. We'll close out with Remarkable Diana, and I thank Doug and Don for their remarkable persistence in hosting BBS Network. We're so grateful to still be on the air as the Peaceful Planet. And thank you so much, Linda, for joining us.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
It's a true pleasure. All right. Thank you again. Bye for now. Bye.